From the Orion Policy Institute, this is Orion Talks. Our podcast brings together experts for a conversation about events shaping the world at the local, national, and global levels. Tune in as we discuss foreign policy, security, human rights, political and economic development, and various other issues.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Orion Talks. I am your host, Marta Furlan. Today, I am joined by Marcos Cebares Jimenez Blanco. Marcos Cebares is a German Marshall Fund Research Fellow and a Spanish diplomat. He previously served as a deputy consul in Mexico City. He studied law at the London School of Economics, and he has written extensively about the advancement and the protection of human rights, and he does research on disinformation online. Mr. Cebares, thank you for joining us and welcome to Orion Talks.
Thank you very much, Marta.
So today with Mr. Cebares, we are going to talk about information, disinformation and foreign media interference in the context of the recent events that have interested Syria. At the end of November, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the armed group led by Abu Muhammad al-Julani, that since 2017 had been in control of Idlib and parts of rural Aleppo in northwest Syria, launched a widely unexpected and remarkably effective offensive that in a few days saw the rebels occupying Damascus and putting an end to the Assad regime. This came after a 13-year civil war that claimed hundreds of thousands of lives and displaced millions of peoples. With the fall of Assad, Russia and Iran have lost an important ally in the Middle East that was key to their capacity to advance their military, strategic, and geopolitical goals in the region. So we will now explore with Mr. Cebares how Moscow and Tehran have been using their information systems to try to shape or reshape the narrative surrounding developments in Syria. So let's start with Russia. Can you please tell us how the Kremlin information machine has been reacting to the events in Syria and how it has been trying to portray them?
Thank you, Marta, for the introduction. Indeed, since the rebels take over of Aleppo on November 30, and as they advance towards Damascus, Russian claims focus on the responsibility of the United States, Israel, NATO, and even Ukraine in allegedly supporting and coordinating the groups that made up the rebel coalition. This is mostly what I talk about on my article. The information campaigns also target Kurdish forces and even suggest some Uyghur involvement, once again hinting the collaboration between not only Russia and Iran, but also China on the information space. Some of the allegations are quite surreal, frankly. In the past month, however, this wasn't mentioned in my article, according to the same tools that I used for the article, so Hamilton 2.0 dashboard from the German Marshall Fund, the think tank that I'm working with, there has been a significant uptick in the volume of information shared by Russian state media and pro-Russian accounts about Syria. This doesn't mean all of this is disinformation. It's just the amount of information that has been shared about Syria. And so analyzing tweets, articles, messages on platforms such as Instagram and Telegram containing the word Syria, it becomes clear that the amount of content shared has more than tripled since the collapse of al-Assad's regime. And among the shared content are some unverifiable or false claims, such as accusations of Western involvement in terrorism and chemical weapon provocations, which are similar to some that were shared all throughout the civil war by the same accounts. But more broadly, these accounts disseminate just generally a pro-Russian narrative, blending factual elements with claims that Russian intervention is necessary to combat jihadism and safeguard regional and national security or protecting minority groups. So some of the main narratives that have been discussed and in these accounts and that I wanted to share with you are, in the first place, a recognition of a power shift in Syria. So knowing that the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad and the rise of militant-linked authorities create uncertainty about Russia's role and influence in the region. Then there is also an accusation of Western aggression and hypocrisy. The United States, UK, NATO, Israel accused of instigating conflict, sometimes even supporting terrorism exploiting Syria, sometimes also accusations of all this being an intention of taking control of Syria's energy resources, or more than energy resources, the ability of Syria to be of being a space of transition for resources coming from other places in the Middle East towards Europe. Then Russia is often depicted as a stabilizing force in Syria, maintaining committed to combating terrorism and maintaining strategic military presence in the region. Israel is also criticized for aggressive operations in Syria. There are also some alleged atrocities being committed by militant groups, and they are these are widely spoken by these accounts. And finally, they are positioning themselves, all these accounts and articles, as truthful counter-narratives to perceived Western misinformation and propaganda. Behind this, there are some objectives that Russia is pursuing in its information manipulation campaign, and these are quite diverse. Primarily, I would say that it seeks to preserve its influence in Syria by ensuring a continued military and political presence. So, in order to keep the air bases and the ports that it uses for other means, such as deploying or pursuing its interest in Africa from those bases. And this is even despite the leadership changes and Western engagement with the new authorities. At the same time, Russia aims to deflect criticism of its actions in Syria and Ukraine by accusing the West of hypocrisy, destabilization. This strategy also justifies its foreign and military policies, both in Syria and Ukraine, as necessary for national security to both domestic and international audiences. So it's trying to convince, in the first place, the Russian population, but also allies and other international audiences, of the alleged necessity of these campaigns. Russia is also seeking to weaken Western unity by exploiting divisions among Western nations and undermining collective responses, positioning itself as a champion of sovereignty and advocating for a multipolar world, right? Something that Russia has been doing for a while already, trying to defeat the narrative of a unipolar world dominated by the United States and its allies. And finally, I would say that another goal is to amplify humanitarian and anti-terrorism concerns, framing its involvement in Syria as crucial for fighting terrorism and protecting regional stabilities, especially threats that could extend to Russia and its allies.
Thank you so much for this very detailed discussion. And now, what about Iran? Can you guide us through the information dynamics there as they relate to the events in Syria? Events which, let's remember, come after a series of important setbacks for Iran and its axis of resistance, including the elimination of Ismail Haniyeh, Yahya Sinwar, and Hassan Nasrallah.
The interesting thing is that the sources, before jumping straight into the actual narratives, I would like to mention the sources that are being shared, and they're quite different in Iran and Russia. I mean, the main sources of both are predominantly state-affiliated media outlets, government channels, and individuals that are aligned with the Russian and Iranian governments. But in Russia, platforms like, for example, this influencer in Telegram that has always hundreds of thousands of likes and retweets, sorry, or reshares on Telegram, is Vladimir Solovyov. But also other like Russia Today, RIA Novosti, all these play a central role in disseminating pro-Kremlin narratives. And these outlets often cite statements from Russian diplomats, military officials, intelligence agencies like the SVR to substantiate claims about Western provocations and the need for Russian involvement. Whereas Iranian sources include also state-affiliated media like Fars News agencies or Press TV. But they also include religious leaders such as Ayatollah Khamenei's thoughts that are widely shared to emphasize the, I would say, the divine and moral justification for resistance. So this is tied to what you were saying about the axis of resistance, or perhaps whatever is left of it after the war in Gaza and in Lebanon. But they also share thoughts by Iranian diplomats, ambassadors, and militia affiliates that are useful for Iranian narrative. So what these narratives include are in the Iranian field is they often talk not only about American involvement, but also, I'm quoting, a Zionist plot. So they include Israel a lot more than Russia does. Russia focuses a lot more, perhaps, on Ukraine and Iran, on Israel. The fall of Al-Assad, of the Al-Assad government, is portrayed as orchestrated by external powers, also Turkey, aiming to destabilize the region. Iran positions itself and its allies as key players in countering these external influences, and there are calls for Syrian youth to rise against foreign occupiers, framing the struggle as part of a broader effort to expel the US and Israel from the region. The narratives also emphasize the reportedly Iran's non-aggressive stance, suggesting that its support for Syria and other nations is purely defensive and aimed at fighting terrorism, amongst others. The condemnation of Israel, as I've already mentioned, and what they called Zionist ambitions. The accounts also frequently describe violent acts attributed to opposition groups, including the desecration of shrines, targeting of minorities, and attacks on civilians, which I think we might get into it later. This is mostly the information or disinformation that has been shared about the new Syrian authorities, HTS and the like, and why many of these have already been debunked. We'll get into it later, I think. But as I was saying, also statements from Ayatollah Khamenei, and also they talk a lot about the safety, the importance of protecting religious sites such as the shrine of Sayyida Zainab. Iran is portraying itself as a protector of these locations. And finally, as well, there's a heavy criticism of the new Syrian leadership, with claims of its collaboration with Israel or failure to ensure the safety and stability of the country and of minorities.
Thank you. It was very interesting to hear more about differences and similarities in the approach that these two countries have been following. And reflecting on these misinformation campaigns by Russia and Iran, how would you say that their current efforts compare to perhaps the approach that they followed in the past throughout the years of the Syrian civil war?
So Russia and Iran actively positioned Syrian President Bashar al-Assad as a legitimate leader and an ally against terrorism throughout the whole of the civil war. I mean, the uprising and then the civil war. And it at the same time, they portrayed Western support for opposition groups as imperialist interference. And these framed the Syrian conflict as part of a broader geopolitical struggle between the West and the axis of resistance and the alliance between Russia, Iran, and the Al-Assad regime. The disinformation campaigns targeted audiences everywhere, but also in the global South, and pro-Assad media outlets and supporters of the hyper-partisan bloggers, they amplified these narratives for years. So what is interesting is that now the Al-Assad propaganda machine is not disappeared completely, but of course it doesn't have the same strength that it used to have. So the Sana agency, the Syria's state news agency, put journalists for years in a very complicated place. It sort of was used as a propaganda tool for both Syria and its foreign allies, and in fabricating reports and often altering wire stories to align with the regime's disinformation campaigns. The Assad's regime, the regime's disinformation campaigns helped it to evade accountability, for example, of the 2013 Ghouta chemical attacks in Syria and manipulate public perception. And this therefore undermined humanitarian aid, medical responses, and public trust in healthcare. And so the effects of these have been devastating for the whole war. Disinformation campaigns prolonged the war and the humanitarian crisis while distorting global perceptions of the conflict and confusing other states, so potential allies or the opposite, potential enemies for years. But the another difference with the new disinformation is that there's a plethora of voices now from actors with contrasting view, and it gets quite confusing. Supporters of Syrian Kurdish groups and secular or minority alliance Syrians tend to view HTS with suspicion of fear. While right-wing anti-immigrant factions of the US and Europe amplify derogatory narratives about HTS in Syria, and these are often reshared as well, or also amplified by Russian accounts. So it gets confusing of like who is sharing this information about whom. Also, conspiracy theories outside Syria falsely claim that HTS is controlled by the US or Israel or even Turkey, even though all these countries have denied involvement. And so I would say that now as well, though Turkish nationalists oppose Syrian Kurds, most opinions shaped by misleading social media reports are generally aligned against the Syrian rebels leading the transitional government. So the objectives were similar, although of course, now that the current situation has changed so much and the actors have in some ways also switched sides after the collapse of the war, the consequences can be very different. And this is something that I wanted to mention as well. What can happen with all this? Well, the false narratives can discourage humanitarian aid and foreign investment to the country, and this also risks derailing the transitional government's plans to hold war criminals accountable and foster sectarian trust, no? So the trust between the different sections and groups within Syria. And so this is why information campaigns are important, because the future of the new regime and the hope for all Syrians is at risk if these disinformation campaigns or information manipulation campaigns achieve their objectives.
Thank you. And given this very complex landscape that you have just described to us, what do you think then the West could do or should do to counter foreign information manipulation over Syria?
Excuse me, could you repeat the question? I think it cut for a second.
Sure. So given this very complex landscape that you have described, what do you think that the West could or should be doing to counter foreign information manipulation over Syria?
That's a very interesting question, and I think also to this we have to add not just the West, but the new Syrian government, right? The new Syrian authorities. And then before getting into what the West can do and these authorities, I think it's also important to first consider whether the new Syrian government intends to counter Russian and Iranian information campaigns, as the role of Russia and Iran in the region and its relationship with the new authorities, including HTS, remains uncertain. So if the government decided to align with Western allies and most importantly to engage with democratic norms and protect minorities in order to maintain also that good relationship with the West, and if it decides therefore to actively combat Russian and Iranian narratives, I think it could begin by promoting transparency through the dissemination of verified evidence-based information, such as like showcasing efforts of to rebuild governance, include minorities, and show the reconstruction that is taking place. But these would need independent fact checkers. And I think this is important to reassess their role. The international community has a mandate here to reassess the importance of independent fact checkers given recent events as well surrounding Meta, etc., as they would be key to monitor, expose, and respond to disinformation on social media platforms that Russian and Iranian affiliated accounts could be sharing about the new government. So it would be important for the new authorities to work closely with these fact checkers. So more generally, what Western allies could do is to further coordinate and amplify unified narratives, ensuring that Syrian voices are prominently featured as well. So highlighting the tangible benefits of Western support, contributions, including the contributions to Syria's recovery, these would help to counter the or counteract the Russian and Iranian claims of neglect and humanitarian violations. Also, strengthening local media and civil society organizations. The role of civil society has been widely discussed since the collapse of Bashar al-Assad's regime. And so these could build resilience against propaganda by fostering a robust and credible information ecosystem now that Syrians will be looking for new sources of information, given that Sana'a will be gone, or at least it will not have the hold of information within Syria. And additionally, I think it's also important when we talk about information or disinformation, it's important to also target global audiences, but particularly in the global south, with counter narratives in their native languages. So, especially, for example, in Spanish-speaking communities, which are a key target of Russian information campaigns. And this would ensure the reach of accurate information beyond English, Arabic, or Russian-speaking countries. Finally, I would say, you and I, we both are working in think tanks, and we know the importance of this. It's difficult to sometimes explain, but I think keeping an eye on think tanks, universities, and research institutions as they produce reports and educational materials that reveal the tactics and implication of Russian or Iranian disinformation, that will certainly be useful for the new authorities and for Western allies. So the idea would be to address these challenges holistically, including all these different tools that can help counter Russian-Iranian information manipulation.
Thank you. And now, in the few minutes that we have left before we conclude this episode, I wanted to discuss with you briefly on the other major actor that we haven't talked about, HTS itself. So something very interesting is that over the past few years, the group has been trying to present a more moderate and a more inclusive image of itself, to the point that we saw Anjulani meeting with representatives of religious minorities in Idlib, Druze, Christians, and engaging in dialogue with them, which was a significant change of course with respect to the violence and property confiscations that had characterized some of the periods of Jabhat al-Nusra. So, what are your thoughts and wondering on the new HTS-led government sharing information or misinformation on certain crucial issues, such as the treatment of Syria's religious minorities?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's difficult to predict, and I am not an expert on this, and I don't know exactly what will happen to the new authorities, whether they will become like the Taliban. Some experts have already been saying that that will not happen. I guess we'll have to see. But in terms of information, and whether the new authorities could engage in censorship and disinformation, this is always a risk, especially when the new government is still taking shape and their commitment to democracy and human rights is still unclear. To consolidate their power and maintain legitimacy, they may suppress reports of sectarian violence or human rights abuses to avoid damaging their reputation domestically and internationally. Knowing also that acknowledging such incidents, if they were to take place, could fuel unrest and weaken their authority, etc. But despite these risks, there is hope that the new authorities will protect minorities and supporters of the previous regime, as they themselves have promised. And There, some of Al-Assad's former allies have already been sharing allegations of targeted killings, and also of, for example, there was this about the destruction of Christmas trees, or some videos of local women being enslaved by jihadist or alleged jihadist. But these have been debunked, at least most of them, and we can see that these propaganda machines are really trying to depict the authorities as terrorists and as savages that will go after minorities. We don't know what will happen, but so far, as I was saying, most of these have been debunked by fact checkers. And once again, here's the importance of independent third party fact checkers. But in any case, my conclusion then would be that international watchdogs, independent journalists, and local dissenters may expose these efforts if they take place, and it'll be harder for the authorities to conceal violations. I think we're learning from what happened with Al-Assad, and Western allies will be careful to make sure that that doesn't happen, and that the information's flowing free in order to assess exactly what and what the new authorities are doing, and whether they are complying with their promises.
Thank you. So with this, we have reached the conclusion of our podcast episode today. Mr. Cebares, thank you so much for joining Orion Talks today and for this very interesting and informative conversation. And
Thank you.
I'd
Thank
like
you
to
very
thank
much.
our listeners for following this latest episode of Orion Talks and for staying with us. Mr. Cebares, thank you once again, and we look forward to hosting you again.
Thank you.